beginning of the end of Christ's ministry. God's purposes know no haste and no delay. We will study from Mark 11:1 through 12:17, 43 verses in all. As you look at the overview, you will discover that our lesson has been divided into two sections: triumph and tragedy, and the question of authority. The triumph is found on Palm Sunday. We have now come through to the end of 2 full years of Christ's life described by Mark. He began his delineation of the Master's ministry with his second Passover. He has gone from 29 to 30, and then from 30 to 31 A.D., and brings us in chapter 11, verse 1, to the Passover of A.D. 31. Jesus is at Bethany. He has been living with Martha and Mary, or perhaps some other friends, for several days. 5 days before the Passover, he sends two of his disciples to find a colt. He plans to ride this colt in triumph into the city. There are several significant points about the story. The colt was unbroken. No man had ever ridden it. The first time it was ridden into a crowd of people, shouting, waving wispy palm branches, throwing clothes on the ground for the little animal to walk on. And Christ, riding upon it, controlled it absolutely. It went through that shouting multitude like a veteran. The owners of the colt loaned it without a question. This colt had found its place in prophecy hundreds of years before, and was now the fulfillment of the prediction that the Messiah would come riding on such a beast. And Jesus, on colt back, rode in triumph into Jerusalem. The multitudes were wild with enthusiasm. They acknowledged Jesus Christ as the Son of David, as the Messiah. And so the Master entered his temple in triumph. Later that Palm Sunday, he cleansed the temple for the second time, cast out the sellers of sacrifices at a profit, the money changers at extortion, and declared that his house should be called a house of prayer to all people, and not be made the exclusive prerogative of the Jewish people. The next day, early in the morning, that's Monday morning, Jesus saw a fig tree. Mark says, a fig tree. Other gospel writers say, the fig tree, to identify it. Christ had talked about the fig tree being planted in a certain man's vineyard. The owner had come for 3 consecutive years to find fruit. And because he had found none, asked the gardener to cut it down. The gardener suggested that it be given one more year of chance, that during that year he would till it, fertilize it, and they would then see whether it brought forth fruit. That one year more made 4 years. Those 4 years were made up of Christ's dealings with the Jewish nation, for the fig tree represented the Jewish people. For 6 months, John the Baptist had preached. For 3 years and 6 months, Jesus Christ preached, making 4 years in all. When Christ came and John came, they declared that the time was fulfilled, that the axe was laid to the root of the tree. Now, after the 4 years, the fig tree still had no fruit, only leaves. And so its blessing was cut off, which is the meaning of the word curse. The blessings that sustain no longer flowed. And immediately, the fig tree withered. And the next day, Tuesday morning, verse 30, of Mark 11, when the disciples passed by, they saw the fig tree dried up from the roots. Trees die from the top, downwards. This tree was sentenced by heaven and died from the root up. Jesus said to them, "Have faith in God. If you want to say to this mountain, move, and have faith, it will move." Now, why did Jesus use this illustration of faith and mountains and mustard seeds in connection with the fig tree? Because I think the fig tree is an example of faithlessness. The reason why it did not bring forth fruit was because it had no faith in the things of God and the things of heaven. And Christ says, even if you have faith as a mustard seed, you will grow up to be a big plant. Whatever you desire, believe. And when you stand praying, forgive. And God will bless. From there, they came to verse 27, to the temple, to meet again the priests and the scribes and the elders. Desire of Ages has a chapter called Days of Conflict. What authority do you have for doing these things? What things? Raising the dead? Cleansing the leper? Restoring sight to the blind? Hearing to the deaf? Speech to the dumb? Strength of body to the paralyzed? What authority do you have? Preaching as never man preached. What authority do you have? Surely all Christ's acts carried their own credentials. Christ left this kind of talking and went back in history to John the Baptist. Was his baptism from heaven or of men? In other words, what authority did he have? And backed into a corner, they would say, "We will not tell you." And so Jesus says, "I won't tell you either." But the evidences and credentials for this kind of ministry is borne by the ministry itself. In the second part, in chapter 12, second part of the questioning of his authority, Jesus Christ applied a parable that he had already told in Isaiah chapter 5. We remember Peter says it was the Spirit of Christ in the prophets that foretold and wrote the prophetic vision. God had a vineyard in a fruitful hill, Palestine. Took out the stones, removed the heathen, built a tower, made a sanctuary in the midst of it, planted it with a true vine, the men of Israel and the plant of Judah, and gave it to husbandmen, rulers, counselors, went into a far country, promised to come for the fruit. And when the time of fruit picking came, he sent his servants. But what do the husbandmen do? They stoned some, they beat others, they wounded still others, they shamefully handled others. He sent many others, and they killed them. Having therefore one son, he said, I will send my son, and they will reverence my son. And when the husbandmen saw the son, they said, this is the heir. Come, let us kill him, and the inheritance will be ours. Having told them this story, Jesus moves to another very well-known event. While the Temple of Solomon was being built, a specially shaped, strange-looking stone was seen by the builders. No one knew exactly where it fitted. Each stone had been marked and numbered, and without any local application of chisel or hammer, eventually fitted into a place. Well, the temple took years to build, and this stone was laid aside. But at last it was found to fit the head of the corner. Commenting on this, Jesus said, this was the Lord's doing. That's Mark 12, verse 11. It's marvelous. And immediately these rulers of Israel perceived that he was talking about himself and about their reaction to him. He himself was the stone. He himself was the son whom the husbandmen were ready to kill. In fact, their guilty secret that they had already plotted with Judas to slay him was troubling their souls. But again, amazingly, the Pharisees and the Herodians try to catch Jesus, to deflect the attention of the people from themselves. Is it lawful to pay tribute to Caesar? So Christ takes a penny that he requests of them. Evidently he didn't have any money himself. And says, whose superscription is this? Caesar's, they reply. Render therefore to Caesar, he says, the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. With what simple brilliance Christ answers their caviling. With what powerful arguments he turns them into their inner needs and into his ability to meet those needs. He has entered Jerusalem in triumph, acknowledged as the Messiah. He has shown himself by parable and miracle and sign to be perfectly cognizant of the rejection, as did the fig tree, of the powers of heaven to bear fruit as a nation. He has cleansed the temple. He has shown them by what authority he does his work. He has appealed to them as husbandmen of the divine vineyard. He has pointed out himself as the stone. And yet they reject him and go their own unmindful way, while he looks over them and yearns for their eternal salvation.